From the heart of rural France, this is the Keto Woman podcast, brought to you by me. Hello, keto lovelies. I'm Daisy Brackenhall, and I've spent most of my life struggling with my weight and confidence, and have always had a difficult relationship with food. Even when I finally got to my target weight after weight loss surgery and eating low carb, I couldn't maintain it and I was miserable. I've been keto now for over 2 years and it has given me the freedom to fall in love with food again without the constant gain, loss, guilt, virtue cycle of before. Health and happiness is where it's at now, running on fat. Welcome to the Keto Woman podcast. Each week I'll be chatting to inspirational women, maybe even the odd man, to discover the secrets to their success so that I can share them with you. So what is keto? Keto is a way of eating that enables you to switch your body's main fuel source from sugar to fat. Who doesn't want to be a fat burner, right? But how do we achieve this? A great place to start is by keeping carbs under 20 grams a day. So things like leafy greens and above ground vegetables, plus some nuts and seeds and the incidental carbs you find in things like full fat dairy. Choose delicious fatty proteins and be free and easy with oily dressings on salad and butter on your veggies. Once you're in the swing of things, you can tweak it to suit you. Make your own personalized keto. You'll hear all sorts of ways to keto from my guests. There is no one way to do keto, no one size fits all. I hope to show you just how flexible and fabulous this way of eating can be. I'm not a doctor, and most of my guests won't be either, so we really can't give you medical advice. It's always best to consult your own doctor when making big changes to your diet and lifestyle, because they know you and your medical history, and so have access to the bigger picture. Wouldn't it be helpful to have one place where you could find all the links? Want to sign up to my new Patreon-exclusive Facebook group, Daisy's Lovelies? No problem. How about subscribing to my YouTube channel? Please help me notch up my first 1,000 subscribers by going to links.ketowomanpodcast.com and following the YouTube link. Not following me on Instagram yet? Hit the Instagram button. You get the idea. All the buttons, all the links you need are at links.ketowomanpodcast.com. This is episode number 103 and is the second part of my interview with Chris Irvin. You can find the show notes at ketowomanpodcast.com/103. Chris is a nutrition science researcher and writer with an expertise in ketogenic dieting. He holds a master's degree in exercise and nutrition science and spent his time in graduate school studying the ketogenic diet for performance and therapeutic applications. Chris is the education manager at Perfect Keto and strives to make the ketogenic diet easy and keto science accessible to everyone. This week, Chris talks about his experience using exogenous ketones, as well as discussing some of the ways he and Perfect Keto recommend using them. If you want to try some of Perfect Keto's products, use code KETOWOMAN15 to get a 15% discount. Chris talks about a few of the products in this episode and the lengths they go to as a company to maintain great quality. So if you've always wanted to try a brain boost with MCTs but get disaster pants using the oil, give one of their MCT powders a go. Check out their full range at perfectketo.com/ketowoman15. The link is also in the show notes or on the links page as usual. I have another very special product range for you to check out. Two great pals of mine, Matt and John, have just launched their range of natural creams and balms. What I especially love about this new business is the love that has gone into it. Matt's girls design the artwork, Matt has set up all the tech stuff, and John makes the fabulous products, so they really do come packaged with love. They are all about simple, natural ingredients. So if you want to balm your lips or nourish your skin, check out naturesjam.com or find the link on my links page at links.ketowomanpodcast.com. At this time, they can only fulfill US orders. On with the show and back to Chris. You played around with your own approach to the ketogenic diet until presumably you found what worked really well for you. And by the sounds of it, that involves some intermittent fasting as well. Mm-hmm. At what point and why did you look at introducing exogenous ketones?
Exogenous ketones kind of came to me really early on in my keto journey because we were researching them in the lab that I was in. So I actually kind of was introduced to the two at a very similar time point. From my experience, I saw that when you take these exogenous ketones, you see an increase in your blood ketones for, 2 to 3 hours, typically for most people, depending on what dose you're taking. So I saw that and I started measuring like subjective feelings of like my mood, my energy level, my cognitive function. I started coming across a lot of the research from Dr. Kunain that was showing how ketones can be pushed into the brain based on their availability on the blood. So if we are able to increase our blood ketones, we may be able to, increase our energy that we're getting to the brain. A lot of that kind of showed me right from the beginning, I had this different perspective of exogenous ketones than what most people get when they're introduced to them. And that was that these can be a great complement to the ketogenic diet. And I always kind of viewed them as like almost a biohacking technique for keto. So I never thought that they were the most important thing or that you had to have them for keto. But what I saw them as was if I'm trying to adapt to keto and I'm having a hard time getting my ketone levels elevated, and that's leading to me feeling pretty crummy, which is making me want to fall off of the diet, exogenous ketones can be beneficial during that time. Or if I'm somebody who it's 3 o'clock in the afternoon, I'm still trying to work. This is kind of one of my favorite times to use them. I'm trying to avoid caffeine because I don't want it to mess with my sleep. I can use exogenous ketones to give myself a little brain boost. Or, something like working in the morning. I like to do a lot of deep work in the morning, so I'm always trying to make sure my brain is primed and ready to go. Exogenous ketones can be beneficial for that. I had already kind of understood a lot of these things that, hey, these things have a place if used correctly. But then when they first kind of started coming to market, we saw this like really big boom in people completely marketing them the wrong way. I mean, it was like, you don't have to follow keto. This is like the magic pill. You take it, you're in ketosis in 30 minutes, all of this stuff that I saw. And for a while there, I got really disappointed and turned off to it because I was like, this is going to be the thing that breaks keto. It's going to be the thing that ruins it for everybody. People are going to be out there eating pancakes and chips and drinking ketones and thinking that they're doing a good thing for their health. That's not the case. So I got a little bit turned off to it for a while. And then I started feeling like this little bit of an obligation to be like, no, I saw the research. I've tested it myself. I know that these have a place if used the right way. So then I kind of felt, a little bit of an obligation to start putting out more education information on it so people could be a little bit more clear about what these things actually are, what they actually do, and not kind of fall victim to some of the marketing techniques that people are using still today.
And what, just out of interest, It's something that strikes me from a health point of view, it actually wouldn't be a good idea to have high blood glucose and high blood ketones at the same time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What would your opinion be on that? Because logically for me, it doesn't seem to be a good idea.
Yeah, I don't think the problem is we don't have a lot of research looking at the two. Mm-hmm. I think at some point there could be some benefit to people who are consuming carbs also using exogenous ketones. But like you're saying, if you're somebody who's extremely insulin resistant and you have elevated blood glucose chronically, I don't know that it would be a good idea. But we do know that like ketones can improve insulin sensitivity. We know that they can help drive blood glucose down. We know that they can, when we're metabolizing ketones, we can, like I mentioned earlier, kind of shuttle glucose down these other pathways that can like increase antioxidant production. So there seems to be some benefit there, but I think there has to be some switch in your diet. I think that if you're following like standard American diet and using exogenous ketones, I just don't think that that's a great fit. But there's just not a ton of research to point to for that. But I think at the very least, you should be following a low carb diet or, low carb most of the time. So, like one case I can imagine where it would be beneficial is you're an athlete or you're somebody who's working out and you train in a low carb state, but then you use carbohydrates strategically before a performance of some sort, and you also use exogenous ketones. I think there could be benefit to that there. But for the people out there who are eating pizza, drinking Coke, and using exogenous ketones, I don't think that's going to be good for health.
Because, ultimately, you're adding another energy source mm-hmm. to your body that your body has to metabolize, aren't you?
Yeah. We don't know because we haven't seen this, but you would probably assume that just adding an extra energy source like that is probably going to start shuttling more things towards fat storage, almost inevitably. If you, you know, if we have this really big energy surplus in the blood, it has to go somewhere. And for, you know, a lot of these people who are probably using it that way, they're probably also pretty sedentary, which means they're not using a lot of energy as it is. So yeah, it's not the best use for these products.
That's my biggest bugbear, really, I think. And it, well, my biggest bugbear is the way they're marketed, as we've touched on.
Yeah.
But, you know, saying it's good for weight loss, an analogy that I hear often is like, you know, it's like spritzing water on your face and saying you've worked out,
right.
Saying it's the same as sweat, which I think is a good analogy because it's that difference, isn't it, between endogenous and exogenous ketones. Mm-hmm. There is a big difference.
Yeah, for anybody who isn't super clear with that, obviously exogenous ketones is coming from outside the body. Endogenous is what your body's producing naturally. When you take exogenous ketones, it is not stimulating ketone production like, say, MCTs would. So it's not going to directly cause fat burning. And I think that's probably one of the biggest ones where they're marketed the wrong way is like people are using it as a weight loss supplement where, hey, I take this, I'm going to lose weight. There are some indirect and long-term adaptations that can occur from taking exogenous ketones that can promote fat burning. But to assume that it's like a fat burning pill that you're going to take it and burn more fat, that's just not the case. I mean, we do know that, you know, if you're metabolizing a lot of ketones, you're going to improve mitochondrial function, lower inflammation. That's going to help you have a greater capacity for fat burning. We also know that if you have more energy, you're probably going to be moving a lot more. So your energy expenditure is going to go up. So those are kind of some indirect and longer term adaptations that can occur that could be beneficial for supporting fat loss. But people have completely ignored that and they've gone the other way and saying, hey, you just take this, you'll be burning fat, which, you know, you have to understand at some point because everybody is looking for a weight loss pill and they're looking for that easy thing. And for, you know, unfortunately, exogenous ketones have fallen into that realm in the keto space, which I think we have a lot of work to do to get them away from that.
Absolutely. And of course, and I completely understand that, you know, who doesn't want the magic pill?
Yeah.
Everyone does. But yes, that is one of the things that I've seen said a lot. Mm-hmm. Okay, so you take these exogenous ketones and you're in ketosis, so all of a sudden you're losing weight. Mm-hmm. And it's like, well, there's some kind of truth to what you said, but it's just completely wrong. It's not, you do kind of follow those steps mm-hmm. when you start keto, but it's not the same just by throwing some ketones into your system. It just doesn't work the same way.
Yeah, and I think there's probably that confusion of like, what's actually happening when you take the supplement? So like you said, just because you're in ketosis and we know that ketosis means fat burning doesn't mean that because something puts you into ketosis that you're burning fat. So when you take exogenous ketones, they're being broken down and released into your blood. So you're just providing ketones into your blood. That doesn't mean that your liver is producing more of them. That has to come from the breakdown of stored body fat. We don't have research on this, but I would assume that when you take exogenous ketones, you're probably going to have actually a blunting of ketone production naturally in the short term while you're taking it. Because to me, that just makes sense from a standpoint of if you are providing your body with this level of ketones, there's probably not a need to be producing more of them during that window. But what I've noticed from doing experimentation myself is that, so say if I start taking ketones and I'll take a baseline measure. So I do a lot of like just self-experimentation with this stuff. I'll take a baseline measure and say I'm at like 0.8 on my blood ketone meter. And then I'll go up to, you know, maybe 1.5, 1.7, 1.8, something like that. And then over the course of 2 to 3 hours, I'll go back down to 0.8. And then from that 0.8 period, I'll see if I continue fasting, then I'll notice that number will start trickling up again. So you're kind of seeing that like you're not, people, when they hear that you may be stopping ketone production in that period when you take it, they think they take it and run the other way and say, oh, ketones, exogenous ketones blunt fat burning and they blunt ketone production. It's like, no, that's not the case. It's just during that time when they're elevated, you're probably not experiencing a ton of natural ketone production. But from what I found is that your body goes back to that natural ketone production immediately afterwards. And interestingly, we actually did have somebody reach out to us who they were helping cancer patients with keto. And they had somebody who had brain cancer who could not get their ketones elevated. And they were having a lot of seizures. And just from taking exogenous ketones like once a day, they actually were able to boost their ketone levels over the course of the whole day and stop having seizures. And it like kind of helped them get into ketosis. So, you know, these things may help the body get more accustomed to experiencing ketones in the blood and metabolizing them and using them and everything like that. But yeah, they're not going to be something, like you said, that's kind of a long-winded way of saying you're not burning fat when you're taking exogenous ketones. Mm. That's just not the way that it works.
Yes, I mean, I think I've started shifting towards thinking of it as a supplement that can be helpful for certain things. And from a personal point of view, the way I'm interested in experimenting with them is for my migraines, which I get much less frequently since I've been keto, but I do still get them sometimes. And I have these weird periods where I will still get them for days on end, and I'm not quite sure why that is. Something to do with hormones, probably. And depression is the other thing. And it's a very long time ago now that I was first given Prozac, and I was on Prozac for a long period of time. But boy, now I would have preferred that they give me exogenous ketones if it could have that kind of boosting effect, which I suspect it could, because that's another thing that's been alleviated with keto. But I do still sometimes have, and again, can have extended periods of being depressed. And so I'm very interested in playing around possibly with this supplement to see if it helps those, because I would rather take that than take, I'm not interested in taking Prozac again. It, not that I have anything against it for people it works for, but it never worked particularly well for me. Again, migraine medication, that I stopped taking that because it was actually doing me harm. And even compared to taking something like ibuprofen, I think it would probably be a better option. So I'm interested in taking it for those reasons and seeing if it could work for me. And perhaps you could just talk about the different applications that people might find benefit from.
Well, to touch on your migraine one there, I don't know if you've stumbled across Alina Gross. Have you seen any of her stuff?
We have tried to record a number of times, and for one reason or another, we haven't been able to, but we should be recording soon.
Okay.
And so, yes, she always comes into my mind when I think about that, because I'm interested in hearing about her research.
Yeah, her research is incredible. I've known her for a few years now. She was kind of one of those people who, like, when keto conferences first started several years ago and people were really starting to buzz about it, we were always at the same conferences. So I got to meet her and hear, like, follow her research. And I know she's doing some really incredible stuff with migraines. But for the different applications of it, I think that there's a couple ways to look at it. So I think that the everyday average keto dieter can benefit from it in a few ways. So one, I think that if you're going through keto adaptation, like I mentioned earlier, I think that's a really good application for it for two, actually for three reasons. So one is, we know that you don't tend to feel great when you start keto, and most people have a hard time getting through this period when they're not feeling great and they have low energy, fatigue, all of that stuff. So I think taking exogenous ketones and providing your body with an energy source while it's getting more accustomed to producing its own is really beneficial for just getting through it. It's kind of more of a, like, let's just maintain our energy production. Let's just get through this period so I can get to the good part of keto. So I think it's really useful during that time. But also, when you talk about using ketone salts, a lot of these have really high electrolyte counts. So you're also able to replenish electrolytes, which is great during that time. And then the other thing that we know is, when it comes to being keto adapted, and the difference between like ketosis and being keto adapted is that when, you know, you can be in ketosis within a couple of days or even just several hours of carb restriction, but that doesn't mean that you're effectively using the ketones that you're producing. And this takes the upregulation of these MCT transporters, which is what allows these ketones to come into the cells. And from research, we've seen that when you have higher, when you, your cells are exposed to higher blood ketone levels, this leads to an upregulation of these MCTs. So for people who are maybe, you know, really insulin resistant when they come to the ketogenic diet and they're having a really hard time burning fat and producing ketones, it could be really useful to take these exogenous ketones to kind of help their body become adapted. So for the beginner, I think those are some really good use cases. And then, you know, a really easy way to look at it for any keto dieter is, anytime that you could experience a benefit from your brain having more energy. So like I mentioned before, what we've seen with the difference between like glucose metabolism and ketone metabolism, and this is something that's been really brilliantly laid out by Dr. Stephen Kunane, who does a lot of research with like neurodegenerative diseases. But he's shown that glucose is pulled into the brain based on the energy demands of the brain. So if you know, the brain has to meet this energy requirement. If you're using glucose, it pulls it in. But you can't, you know, eat ice cream and increase your energy to the brain. Just because you provide more glucose doesn't mean that you're getting more to the brain. But ketones are different. Ketones actually get pushed into the brain based on their availability in the blood. So, you know, from that information, we know that if you can increase your blood ketones, then you should be able to increase the energy going to your brain. So, you know, for me, that's why when I mentioned earlier, somebody who you're trying to reduce caffeine, you're looking to improve your cognitive function for work or a presentation, or maybe before a workout, you're just tired, your mood's down, something like that. I think these can be a really great pick-me-up during that time.
That's the case where people also use the MCT oil, isn't it?
Yes, exactly. And I really like using them together. And that's something that I believe that's come out of Dr. DiAgostino's lab, showing like the synergistic effect of the two. So I do like using them together. Usually what you'll see is that ketones will give you a moderate bump in your ketone production, but it is natural. So, you know, these MCTs are being broken down and converted to ketones, which is great. Exogenous ketones will give you more of a boost. I think they work really great in combination. I probably use MCTs more frequently than I use the exogenous ketones. The exogenous ketones are more of just when I'm really looking for that big bump. But MCTs are something that, you know, if I'm going for coffee, I'll usually just throw it in there because, you know, why not? I may as well get it in there. So I think those are really good uses for that. But then when you start looking at the therapeutic side of things, which we need a lot more research here because most of this research is in people who are, a lot of it is animal research. So and anecdotal evidence. So we don't have a whole lot of like really well-controlled, randomized controlled trials looking at exogenous ketones for therapeutic uses. But some of the cases where I think it can be really great is epilepsy, neurodegenerative diseases. So we know that things like Alzheimer's, one of the big things that we see is insulin resistance in the brain, which is the lack of proper energy in the brain. So if we can provide a really good energy source that actually can help lower inflammation, that can only help. So I think that's a really good use for it. I think that for cancer, especially for, you know, when you're combining treatments. So if you're doing chemotherapy or radiation, I think that having elevated blood ketones can just be helpful for maybe even helping you reduce the dose that you have to take for some of those medications. So I think there's a lot of use there. And then one of the really most exciting cases for me, outside of, you know, cancer and Alzheimer's get me excited because that's something that everybody knows somebody that's suffering from those things and they're heartbreaking. They're some of the most devastating conditions out there. But I get really excited about the use of ketones for traumatic brain injury and concussions because when you look at, and I'll kind of give a brief little explanation there. I think a good way to look at these things is when you have a concussion or some sort of major head trauma, we have this like really big increase in glucose uptake in the brain. And that tends to lead to this insulin resistance in the brain, which creates this energy deficit in the brain. And that can lead to all of these conditions and symptoms that we see from concussions that, you know, the long-term problems that you see with them. But what we've seen with a lot of the animal research on this is that while the brain can become insulin resistant and can't take up glucose, it can still use ketones during this time. And the ketones can help lower the inflammation that you're seeing after traumatic brain injury. It can make up for that energy deficit. So I think that when you start looking at, you know, contact sports or, you know, like football is kind of a big one for me. Like whenever I'll watch a football game and I'll see American football, that is, and I'll see like somebody just get blasted in the head and then come on the sideline and they're slugging back like a sports drink like Gatorade or something that's full of sugar. I'm just like slapping myself on the head like, what are you doing? You know, so it's a serious case because, you know, we're seeing more and more football players coming out and, you know, suicide and like depression, anxiety, like all of these things. And not just football players, just, you know, any contact sport or anything in life that results in a lot of head trauma, you know, car accidents, things like that.
I forget the name. What's the name of the condition? I remember listening to a podcast about it that can result after getting concussion and it can particular can lead to aggression and suicide and is a real big problem with college students who've been playing those kind of sports.
I'm drawing a blank on it now too. I cannot I can't pull it out because they found that condition in one of the football players who had committed suicide, and they did a scan of his brain and they found that condition in his brain.
Yeah, that's
as well.
What the podcast was about. And I can't remember the name of, I can picture the podcast and I can't remember the name. I will put it in the show notes. Yeah. I will remember it afterwards and I'll put it in the show notes because it was fascinating.
Yeah. I'm
and terrifying at the same time.
For sure. And that's the thing is like, people don't know that just a couple concussions when you're in your 20s, you know, you might not experience the detrimental effects of that until years later. I was talking to a guy who works at a hospital where they have a lot of like very serious head traumas come in, and their standard treatment for these people is putting them on a glucose drip. Like they're just putting sugar. I talked to him about it and he was just like, well, we don't know what else to do. We don't know about this information. And the standard of care is, hey, we have to be, you know, putting a ton of sugar into these people to make sure that we can get energy to the brain so we don't lose them. That's just what we have to do. So you start seeing that and you know, just add that to the list of the broken things that are going on in the medical field. I mean, we're completely mistreating conditions, which, you know, that's not the only one. We have plenty of those that we're messing up. But yeah, so that's one use case where I think it's just something that we should be looking into more. But like I said, for all of these things, we need a ton more research. Like luckily we have people who are willing to go out there and test in themselves and, you know, provide a lot of anecdotal evidence for us. But you know, if we're going to actually have some policy changes and you know, change the way that we're treating these conditions, it's something that we're going to need a lot more research on. So I'm hoping that we really start seeing that in the next couple of years.
And what would you say to the concerns that some people have about the ketones and the whole racemic debate, that our bodies aren't familiar with the form that we take them in and that could potentially have long-term damage and that debate? What are your thoughts on that?
It is a good debate because especially for somebody who's like really into the biochemistry of it and you start looking at like the isomers and everything, like I get that. We just haven't seen that in research yet. We haven't seen that it is dangerous. I think that we're jumping to conclusions. We haven't seen any negative effects from taking the things yet. I think to assume that just because it's different from what we produce in the body, I think that fear is coming from the fact that like people assume that it has to be the same as what the body's producing. It's just different. Like to your point, it's a supplement, right? Like it's just, it's like, it's just like whey protein, right? Is a supplement that is, it's different, but you can put it in your body and it can still provide benefits. So until we actually see some really good research research at all that's showing us that, hey, these things could potentially be dangerous. I mean, right now we're showing that they work, they're providing benefit, and we're not seeing any side effects. So of course, I would love to have 80 years of research or have a study on somebody who's been taking them for their whole life for 40 years, taking it every day. Like that would be fantastic, but we don't have that. But I don't think that that means that we have to wait and not help people. Like when I hear these stories of people who, like the case of the woman who had cancer, who was having seizures every single day and taking the exogenous ketones stopped her from having seizures. If there is something that's maybe not beneficial from those exogenous ketones, in a case like that, it's like her quality of life has improved so much that I just can't imagine that we're going to find anything in research that's going to tell us that we should prevent her from experiencing that because these things are different from what our body produces naturally. But as always, like I'll be always looking forward to some research on it and hoping, you know, I'm okay with being proven wrong. I don't have such an ego that I'm afraid to learn something new. So if research comes out on that, I'll be just as excited to see that as if it comes out showing that it's great.
The person I'm thinking of who has spoken about this and has concerns about it doesn't have the concerns for the kind of people you've been mentioning for that therapeutic approach. I think his concern really was for the everyday people using it, you know, maybe too much with that, just with that question mark that maybe there could be long-term issues. But I understand I can see the argument on both sides for that.
Yeah. And like I said, I mean, I think that it's something that we need to research more. And admittedly, I will say that, you know, I think that people probably do rely on exogenous ketones too much in general. Like the people that are taking them, I don't think there's something that you need to be taking 3, 4, 5 times a day, which I think some people are doing. I think that like, I don't take them every day. I take them when I need them. So, you know, 3 to 4 times a week, I'm using a scoop of them. So that's, I think, probably a better use case. And I feel pretty confident in it from what I've seen so far in the research that it is safe, like I said. But we totally need so much more research on this, especially in humans. I mean, most of the research is in animals. There is some stuff in humans, but it hasn't been very well controlled. And in every study that's using it is using some different variation of it. So I think that like we need to kind of sit down and really isolate how we should be using these things, test it, and then, you know, publish a lot more research on it. And hopefully that happens in the next few years.
Yeah, absolutely. And someone in my Facebook group was talking about how she has started using them just on those days mm-hmm. when her mood is a bit low and she feels her motivation is really low. And those are the days that she has given into the old carb addiction tendencies. Mm-hmm. And she said, and I agree, she would rather take some exogenous ketones, lift her mood a bit, and stay away from the carbs. Mm-hmm. Then either try and white knuckle it through the day
yeah.
or end up giving in and end up having a carb binge that could quite easily last for more than just one day. So
yeah.
let's just say I've got down off my high horse and I'm starting to just think around the potential uses of this supplement mm-hmm. as I now look at it, but still very much have my concerns with the way some people market it.
Yeah, and I think those are all valid concerns. And, you know, there's nothing wrong with being on your high horse when it comes to your health. You know, like if there's people out there that are always trying to take advantage of the way that our minds work and trying to use certain marketing techniques to get, you know, we see it with the exogenous ketones and weight loss. We know that from a psychological standpoint, people want an easy weight loss solution. So they know that, hey, if I market these exogenous ketones for that reason, it can work. So you should always be skeptical of those things. I think that at the end of the day, if you do your research and you find a reason why you should give something a try and self-experiment with it, then that's exactly what you should do, is self-experiment with it, see how it works for you, and then come to a conclusion. We shouldn't be listening to everything that we hear and just following what anybody says, but we also shouldn't discredit everything too. You know, we should probably fall into that somewhere in the middle where we're taking the time to do our own research and actually experimenting on ourselves to find what works best.
For sure. And what should people be looking for if they do decide they want to try some exogenous ketones for themselves? I mean, obviously they should be looking at your company,
right?
But I have to say, I mean, I am joking there a little bit, but from everything I've read and everything I've heard, you do take great care in the quality of your ingredients. Mm-hmm. And that's why I was interested in talking to you, because it sounds like that's something that's really important to your company.
Yeah.
So perhaps you could talk a little bit about that, about what you put in and don't put into your product, but also what people should be looking at if they're not buying your product, they're buying another one, perhaps because they, you know, they don't live in the States and it's not easy to get, or they just want to get a different product. What is it that they should be looking for in the ingredients list?
Great question. So I'm going to start kind of from the top and break it down. So there's two different exogenous ketone types when it comes to supplements. So you can take ketone esters or you can take the ketone salts. I think that both of them have their place. Ketone esters, you're going to get a much like more robust increase in your ketone levels. And you're going to, what I've noticed is that it peaks quicker, but it comes back down to baseline a little bit faster. Whereas with ketone salts, you're going to get more of a modest increase. And it's going to last a little bit longer. That's what I found anecdotally. So when it comes to choosing between those two, we'll just start there, that it depends on what your goal is. So I think that like for therapeutic use, esters may be more beneficial sometimes. And when it comes to like sports performance, esters may be more beneficial, but they're very expensive. So probably not something that you're going to be able to take on a daily basis. Ketone salts are also expensive, but they're a heck of a lot cheaper than esters. So I kind of see it as a, salts are probably what you could probably use on more of a more regular basis, whereas esters are something that you're going to be using strategically. So an example of that would be if you're an endurance athlete, you may take ketone salts while you're training, and then you may decide to take an ester on game day or on, you know, competition day. Or if you're somebody, let's just say cancer, for instance, maybe you're taking exogenous ketone salts, but then before like radiation, you use the ketone ester to get that big spike. So that's kind of the breakdown there. Now, when we're looking at salts, there's a couple things to look for. So traditionally, I always used to be really against the companies who are putting out like exogenous ketone products that contain like 2 to 3 grams of exogenous ketones, and then they're marketing it as a ketone product. But I've stepped back from that a little bit because not everybody can stomach exogenous ketones when they first start. So I actually think that, you know, that's actually one of the reasons we came out with a ketone capsule product that is much lower dose than even what we would consider to be the efficacious dose. But it's a really great way to introduce exogenous ketones to people because they can control their dose a little bit more and then determine, you know, what they can handle and increase their dose accordingly. But outside of that, when you're actually talking about trying to take like a full serving, you really want to be in that like somewhere in the like 10 to 13, 14 grams, depending on the person, is where you're going to get the most beneficial dose. Now, you shouldn't start with that, but you need to kind of work your way up to it. But there's a lot of products out there who will, and this is a typical supplement, something that people in the supplement space love to do is they find a buzz product that people are big into, and then they sprinkle it into their product just to, so they can put it on the label. So if you're seeing like, you know, a pre-workout or you're seeing some product that's being marketed as exogenous ketones is the primary ingredient, but you're talking like 2 to 3 to 4 grams in it, that's somebody that's trying to take advantage of you, I think.
And what you're looking for on the ingredients list is the BHB content. Is that right?
The BHB content, yeah. With the BHB content, we have, I believe it's just over 11 grams in ours, which is around like what we found to be like the efficacious dose. But even that is going to depend on for everybody. I know some of my coworkers who they only do a half a scoop and like 6 to 7 grams is plenty for them. They can get just as much benefit from that. I'm a little bit bigger, so I tend to need a little bit more, and I find that a scoop works really well for me. So yeah, you're looking for the BHB on there, and you really want to try to find one that has that higher dose in there so you know you're getting the most bang for your buck. But then outside of that, you want to make sure that you're avoiding a lot of the fillers. So a lot of companies now, because they're trying to make it cheaper, they're putting filler ingredients in there, especially with like the sweeteners. They're using like sucrose. Because here's the thing, exogenous ketones don't taste great by themselves. I mean, they're pretty rough. If anybody's ever taken like the raw salts, it's a struggle. Especially because a lot of them are bound to minerals. So that's kind of something to take into consideration is like, you know, you don't want to be looking for something that's using sucralose or, you know, something like, I've kind of changed my opinion a little bit on erythritol. I think that it can maybe be okay, but like, I think too many people are putting a lot of these crummy ingredients in there. At the end of the day, you don't really have to have a lot in there. You can have the BHB salts. You know, we use like a monk fruit type of blend, a little bit of stevia to help sweeten it up a little bit, but we don't have a lot of these extra filler ingredients. You should have a pretty short ingredient list when you're looking at the ketones.
Because they tend to be super sweet,
yeah,
in general, don't they? Which is almost as nasty, I think, as being super salty.
Yeah, it's, you know, you got to try to find this like happy medium. You know, it's...
You're just enough to mask the nastiness.
Yeah, for sure.
And taste-wise, that is.
We battled that for a long time. I mean, we just came out with a newer rendition of our flavor just a few months ago because I think we kind of went too far the other way where we were too bitter and then we went too sweet and then we tried to find somewhere in the middle. And I think we've done a pretty good job of that now. And the one that we use, so, you know, the other thing to look at is what the salts are bound to. So we use a magnesium, sodium, calcium blend. I have always thought that that was the best. I don't think that you should use only one. Like I've noticed when I was in grad school, I would experiment with like full doses of just calcium BHB and it would really tear up my gut and I would not feel great after having that, which of course, if you're consuming that much calcium, that can be the case. So I think having like a blend is also important because you can, one, you're getting those minerals in. So like magnesium, sodium, and calcium, you need really all of those on a keto diet because you're typically deficient in them. But also you're getting a nice blend where you're not going too heavy on one mineral. So you're not just doing, you know, 11 grams of salt or, you know, something like that. So you're able to balance it out a little bit more.
Oh, that's interesting. And I think most people who are keto are used to looking at the ingredients list on pretty well everything they pick up. I just think it's useful to know what they should be looking for.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the biggest thing that you'll find is the sweetener. So like I said, we use monk fruit and stevia for ours. But we also will use like natural flavors. So we'll use like natural, in our chocolate one, we have like natural flavor coming from cacao. that's in there. Because like you said earlier, Dr. Augustine has always been, and it's one of the biggest things that appealed to me, he's always been a really big proponent of quality. He will not sacrifice costs and things like that to put out a better product. It's all about making sure that it's quality ingredients. So we always are using some natural flavor rather than something that's like synthetic, which more and more you're seeing that. I think the two things you're seeing most as this market grows and you see people trying to come out with products is filler ingredients or artificial sweeteners or anything like that that's not natural, and really low doses of these ketones to try to kind of trick people into buying them. So I think that's probably the two biggest things to have a heads up towards.
Yeah, and I think anyone who takes supplements is used to using that way of thinking as well when they're looking at the ingredients. I certainly, when I'm looking to buy magnesium on Amazon or whatever, you always look to see, well, how many grams are you actually getting per tablet? They might say there's 90 tablets in a bottle, but there's a big difference when you're comparing prices, whether it's 200 milligrams or 400. So we're used to doing that, I think. Mm-hmm. It's just useful to know what you're looking for.
Yeah.
While we're talking about ingredients, just briefly, I'd be interested to know what your MCT oil powder, how that is produced. Because I know to turn MCT oil into a powder, you have to use things like starch, don't you, in that process? What is it that you use to turn it into a powder, and how much of it is left?
Yeah, so we use an acacia fiber for it. And that was another thing. So that was something where Dr. Gustin was testing very frequently. We knew we didn't want to use a starch. So you'll see a lot of companies who are using some sort of like a dextrose or like some sort of soluble corn fiber or anything like that. You'll see that quite a bit. So we didn't want to do that. We wanted to avoid those things. So, you know, even though those things can be keto friendly in the sense that like they're low in carbs and they're not going to kick you out of ketosis, they're not healthy. So we wanted to avoid those things. So we use an acacia fiber, which we found to be keto friendly, and it's good for you in the sense that like you don't have to worry about it causing a lot of like GI distress or disrupting your health in any way. And we actually noticed it tends to be a little bit easier on the gut as well. So with our product, I believe that it is 10 grams of MCT oil powder gives you 7 grams of the MCT. So you're having, there's about 3 grams of fiber in that serving and then 7 grams of the MCTs, which is really good for beginners, especially. Like, I think that if you're strictly just going for maximizing ketone production, if that's your goal, then you could probably just go with an oil because you can have probably more MCTs per serving when you do that. But it's a little bit harder on your gut, especially for somebody who's never had it before. So I think the MCT oil powder is a little bit better because it's the fiber tends to slow down the digestion, I think, just a little bit. So you don't have this like kind of just blast of MCTs, but then also, you know, the dose is a little bit lower and you're not going straight into that 14, 15 gram range, which we know can cause some problems in people if they're not used to it.
Oh, yes. I've experienced that for myself.
Same.
That's interesting, actually, because so that's the kind of the reason why the powder can be tolerated more easily.
Yeah.
One, because you're reducing the dose, but two, you're slowing it down a bit with the fiber. Because I've seen that confusion. People are saying, well, I don't understand. This is MCT oil. How come there's a carbohydrate amount listed in the ingredients?
Mm-hmm.
But that's why. It's because of the process you have to go through to change it from an oil to a powder.
Yeah, definitely. And it, you know, it helps with like mixability too. So when you put it with, when you turn it into a powder like that, and then you combine it with some sort of source like that, you can mix it into things a lot better. So we know that, you know, if you just put oil in your coffee or whatever, it's just kind of sitting on top. It doesn't really blend in that well. But the powders, you can really mix them in pretty nicely. So you can, you know, put them into a shake very easily. You can cook with them very easily. You can put them in your coffee. So I like to put it a little bit in my coffee every morning is kind of how I do it. So that's kind of another nice luxury of it. And, you know, on the other side of things, it's not always about function for everybody. I'm more of a eat for function type of person, but some people just like to enjoy what they're putting in their body. And being able to flavor the MCTs, I think, is a big thing for people. We have chocolate, salted caramel, and vanilla are the three that we have. And, you know, it's a nice thing. You can make like a, you know, vanilla latte or something like that, which, you know, for some people, if they're having to give up their Starbucks run where they're getting their, you know, 100 grams of sugar coffee drink, this can be a nice alternative to that.
Right. And it's something that's often not listed, you know, what that carbohydrate content is. So I've got used to asking anyone who produces MCT oil powder what they're using to make it, because it does make a difference.
Yeah, I would say that if you're looking at them and you're comparing, if one product is drastically cheaper than another and they're not listing what they're using for their source, chances are they're using one that you probably don't want because they're not just magically able to make their product all that much cheaper. They're making it cheaper by using cheaper ingredients. So that's kind of a good test people can use if they're not sure what's in it.
That's right. Well, thank you very much. It's been a fascinating discussion. I've really enjoyed it and it's added to my knowledge and added to the challenge that's going on in my mind about exogenous ketones. But I must admit, I'm coming around much more to seeing how thinking of it as a supplement and seeing how it can help people in different situations potentially. But still, I like the fact that you agree with the things that I'm wary of too.
Yeah, no, those are the things that you should, I think you're so right in being wary of those things. And, you know, it's something that we obviously have to combat a lot here. Just speaking about like perfect keto is the image that has been put in people's mind about exogenous ketones. Mm-hmm. Everybody knows the first thing that you learn about something, it's very hard to change that, right? Like you could be told something completely wrong, but if it's the first thing you've been told, that's just what you believe.
It sticks.
So when somebody hears that, and usually what it is it's like there's a Facebook group and somebody came into that Facebook group marketing exogenous ketone product for what it's not, which is like replacing the diet and whatnot. So then that Facebook group will put out a message that says, hey, exogenous ketones are garbage. You're not allowed to talk about them in here. Avoid them. You don't need them on keto. And then that's what kind of what puts that in people's minds. But I think there's, you know, you can have this practical approach. It's kind of like, I like to look at it like coffee too, where it's like, you know, you don't have to drink coffee in the day, but it definitely helps, right? Like it helps wake you up and it helps you feel better. And that's kind of how I view exogenous ketones. You don't have to have them and they're not an essential thing for a ketogenic diet, but that doesn't mean that they can't be helpful if they're used strategically.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, thank you again. Perhaps you could finish off the show with a top tip for our listeners.
Top tip. Yeah. So I think that the best tip I can offer would be for, so do you have a beginner's crowd? I guess that can kind of help me choose my tip here. Is a lot of people that are new to keto or people that are more advanced, would you say?
Well, both. Maybe you should give us two top tips, okay. One for each.
So I'll give two tips. First tip is for beginners, and that is that you do not need to overstress about counting calories and macros when you start keto. I think the first thing you should do when you start keto is just find the correct approved food list that you should be sticking to and eat to satiety and allow your body to adapt. Too many people are severely calorie restricting when they start keto and putting a lot of pressure, like mental pressure on themselves to stick to these certain macros that I think can, you know, inevitably promote eating disorders. So I think it's better for us to repair that thinking and just stick to keto foods, let your body adapt, and then make changes as you need to later. So that'd be tip one for beginners. And then I think the other one is that we don't need to fear protein consumption. Study that came out last year showed that for they had people exercising on a ketogenic diet and eating just 20% of their calories from protein. And they showed muscle loss in those people, especially in the men in that group, which is just a testament to the fact that we probably need to be eating more protein. It's not something we need to fear. I think when you look it up, it's like one of the biggest fears in the keto space is having too much protein. It's not going to get converted into chocolate cake in your body through having too much of it. So I think a lot of us can focus on eating more protein, especially if they have demands and they're requiring it, like working out and such.
And certainly I find, well, one, because I like fatty protein, but I find that if you predominantly stick to fatty protein, it's very difficult to eat more than a certain amount anyway.
Yeah.
You could have mountains of it in front of you, but there's actually only so much you can eat. I have to say when it's leaner protein, it's easier to eat a lot more.
No, and that's a good point too. I think that the fattier protein cuts is just the way to go. Like for me, I don't really do a whole lot of added fat to my diet. I actually kind of lately have been trending more towards a carnivore approach of just eating a lot of meat. And I've found that it's way better if I'm just eating fattier cuts of meat rather than before where it's like, you know, meat on a salad with oil and butter and like all this extra stuff. I just go for the fatty meat source. And I think it's great for satiety and, you know, actually getting the protein demand that I need and the calories too.
Right. The only thing with some people who actually don't like fatty cuts.
Yeah.
Weirdos, as far as I'm concerned.
Same.
But for those people, you know, they would rather have something lean and add some mayonnaise or some butter or some cheese or whatever. But my favorite, when I did a carnivore experiment, mm-hmm. didn't actually work out too well for me, but that's another story. But my favorite thing, and if you haven't tried it, you must, a really nice fatty lamb ribs.
Ooh, I have not had that yet.
When the fat, so you have to make sure when you find them that the butcher hasn't trimmed them all off.
Yeah.
But when the ribs and at the end, there's this lovely lump of fat. And when you roast them in the oven and it goes, the fat renders out a little bit, but goes all crispy and it's delicious. So you must try those.
Yeah, I will. I'm going to add that to my list. I'm always down to try any new meats that I haven't had yet. So I'll have to give that a try.
That was one thing I found actually when I was doing the carnivore challenge. It was just so easy because it's, you know, quick and easy mm-hmm. to cook those things. You don't have to think about what you're going to go for dinner, and shopping was a lot easier as well. But I found myself wandering around and trying different things. And bearing in mind, I've lived in France for 15 years mm-hmm. and it wasn't until I did the challenge a couple of months ago that I found them. These things called duck gratin, which are basically like duck scratchings as opposed to pork scratchings. I call them pork scratchings in the UK. What do Americans call them? Cracklins, I think.
Oh, cracklins. Okay, yeah.
Yeah, so it's not pork rinds with the dry, airy stuff. It's where the fat is still attached.
Yes.
So they're crunchy. Mm-hmm. But little duck pieces like that.
I did not know I've never heard of that before.
They were very delicious. And I didn't know they existed until I did my carnivore challenge. So there you go.
Man, I'm going to have to look for that. I don't know if we have that in the US, but if they are, I'm going to have to find it. That might be a hidden gem somewhere.
I know. No, they do, I think, certainly up in Canada, which I know is not the US, but mm-hmm. so I think maybe in certain areas of the US you might be able to find them. I'm not sure if it's a standard thing that you could find anywhere, but yes, certainly worth hunting out. They are very delicious.
Nice. I'll definitely have to check that out. That's awesome.
And duck in general, you know, duck with the duck breasts and the confit, mm-hmm. you know, that's a lovely thing to have on carnivore.
Absolutely.
We're going off on a carnivore tangent now, so.
Yeah, we can have a whole nother episode on that one.
I will let you go. Thanks again, Chris, for talking to me today. It's been fascinating.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
To get the resources and links from this show, please go to ketowomanpodcast.com/episodes. Please share this podcast with as many people as possible by sharing one of my links or just taking a screenshot of an episode that you enjoyed. Reviews really help raise the profile of the podcast, which gets it in front of more people, but also helps me attract a wide variety of guests. So please take a minute to leave a review on whichever podcast app or platform you like to listen on. It doesn't go unnoticed by me, the people who regularly like, share, and comment on my posts. Your support really does mean the world to me. Thank you. Are you enjoying this podcast? Help me make more episodes and videos by making a pledge at my Patreon page, patreon.com/ketowoman, or simply hit the support button on the Keto Woman podcast website. Don't forget to join in the fun on the Keto Woman podcast Instagram and Facebook pages and Daisy_KetoWoman on Twitter. Are you my next extraordinary woman? Maybe you've got an idea for a show, a topic you would like to hear about. Let me know how I can tickle your earbuds by dropping me a line at daisy@ketowomanpodcast.com. This week's end quote is from Albert Einstein. Life is like riding a bicycle. To keep your balance, you must keep moving. Bye-bye, keto lovelies.